This week on the show, nudist holidays with your family. Ricky makes Steve speechless. Four great bits involving Ricky and Steve. And a listener has alerted us to a recent interview where Steve talks about the XFM days and his Instagram comments. All that and heaps more coming up right now. Welcome back to the Carly Pilk Boys podcast. I'm David Ferrier.
With Stephen Merchant.
We're two little radio fellas air-checking the old Ricky Gervais XFM shows. Obviously, I've listened to heaps. This is Zach's first time today's show, Series 2, Episode 7, a.k.a. Dinner with Bowie. Zach, your Heat-style headline for today's show, please.
If this episode was recapped in Heat, I think the headline would be exposed! The Ricky Gervais Show, nothing without radio genius, Carl Pilkington.
I think there are four great Ricky and Steve bits in this episode, and we'll go through them one by one when they come up in the air check.
I've been thinking about it since I listened to it, and I think it's not to say Ricky and Steve aren't good together, because they obviously are, but I think there's a key component that they don't realize in these last two episodes.
Which is what?
Early on, they prepared a lot of content. So they had bits, they had segments. Remember they were doing like Ricky's film review and stuff like that. It got to a point where they had to start dropping all of those because Carl stuff was coming up all the time. Remember there's a few episodes where they're just so jam-packed with content. I think they got used to not preparing things because Carl was just coming out with stuff. Then Carl goes away for 2 weeks. They don't go back to preparing things. They're just like, oh, it'll be fine. Because in this episode, a number of times they go like, we got nothing to talk about.
They end up talking about nudist beaches for fall breaks.
And then like they have people contact them the last 2 weeks saying like, hey guys, you're barely doing any content. You keep playing songs instead of talking about things. And so I just think they got used to, whether or not they realized, that they could just, you know, shoot the shit and it would get them through. Whereas previously, when this started, they came prepared with quite a lot of stuff.
Carl is doing all the heavy lifting and they are exposed. Did you notice that like Ricky hangs back a lot more in this episode as well?
He does.
It's really Steve who's trying to keep things going.
And it's interesting that he doesn't want to, there's a few times where I think he feels like that they're getting close to, you know, breaking codes or something like that.
Yeah.
He goes like, whoa, guys, whoa, be careful. Which is like, usually he's the one pushing it to the edge. And then like someone else like Carl or Steve is going like, oh, come back a little bit.
He gets very coy at moments, particularly the nudist beach stuff, which we'll get to later. But when Claire is describing the guy getting a boner and he's like, oh, I'm not sure if we should sort of go this way. It's like if it's childish innuendo, great. But if it's actually describing a real thing, a real dick, he's like, no. Which made me reflect on everything that Ricky's been a part of. Like, it is completely, all of Ricky's work is completely sexless.
That's true.
In The Invention of Lying, he and the love interest don't even kiss.
Yeah, interesting.
The last scene is them holding hands.
It's kind of a rom-com. It's got a romantic storyline to it.
Yeah.
Do any of these other shows have, well, kind of like in extras and stuff like that, they're very, you know, they have a, there's an affection to the relationship, but it's kind of played for humor, the lack of warmness. He's like very, he's quite cold to his part. Is it? Wait, are they together?
No, they're friends.
Oh, they're friends. That's why they're so cold. Okay, I forgot for a moment. I'm like, hang on, that's actually quite an unhealthy relationship, come to think of it.
No, oh, but at the end of The Office, this Christmas specials are all about him trying to like meet someone. But even then there's no kiss. Like you've never seen Ricky. Maybe it's a deal he made with Jane, his real life partner.
Yeah, maybe.
No kiss. But then moments like that where I hear that he starts to squirm a little bit because it's not the childish innuendo that he enjoys. That there's something sort of quite sexually conservative about Ricky.
Yeah, I've never thought of that.
But not that I'm like, come on, Ricky.
Get your shirt off.
But if it's childish, because the innuendo, but then there's also jokes about how he like, well, not jokes, references to the fact that he loves to get his dick and balls out in front of his friends.
Yeah.
You know, when they come to the door and Steve saying like, there's not a part of your anatomy that I haven't seen. So if it's childish, okay. But if it's serious and adult or anyway, like sincerely, you know, involving anything sexual, no. Yeah. Bit of business. This episode was broadcast the 5th of October 2002. The Office Series 2 debuted on the 30th of September. So
a week prior.
Yeah. So wait. Last week's show was the 28th, I'm pretty sure. Does that make sense? The 30th.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 2 days after the last episode, Series 2 of The Office debuted. So it happened between these two episodes. That's why Zach and I have started a bonus podcast for the Patreon covering The Office Series 2 that will run in conjunction with the XFM show for the next 6 weeks. It's like a companion podcast.
And if you're thinking, well, you guys just have enough knowledge to comment on radio, what gives you the authority to comment on TV? Well, we're choosing to.
Yeah.
That's our authority.
None. We just want to.
Yeah.
That's it. The it's for a new spin-off podcast, a Patreon-only podcast called The Bready Brett Boys. And it's going to be after The Office. It will be about content from the wider RSK universe. So not related to the XFM show. It'll be things that Ricky, Steve and or Kyle have done outside of the radio show.
And you know what? I'll just make a quick comment after watching the first episode of season two recently of The Office. It's incredible to see Ricky going full tilt, don't you think? Because on the podcast, he's like leaning back, not involved, not prepared. But watching something that they've prepared and put effort into and are really trying to perform, I'm like, man, oh yeah, I forgot that they're great. Like, do you know what I mean? I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot that this was like a once in a lifetime performance.
Well, because you've watched the US Office a lot.
Yeah.
I've watched the US Office a fair bit in last year, but I also haven't watched the UK Office in years.
I haven't watched the UK Office since I was 13, so I reckon.
So that's also part of it, is we're sort of making ourselves reacquainted with it via the Bready Brett Boys podcast. To access it, you'll need to become a senior producer of the show. It's a new tier on the Patreon. It's only $3.50 a month. So it's only $1.50 more than the assistant producer level. And you get a whole other podcast. Patreon.com/CarlyPilkBoys.
Bit Ribbit Froggy says buy it.
By supporting the show, it also helps me to pay off this Rodecaster, which I just played that fantastic grab from. And it helps Zach justify to his wife and baby why he leaves them each week to go and talk about a 20-year-old radio show.
Yeah.
So get around it.
Tough conversation. Like the baby screaming this morning. And I'm like, yeah, I'm off to talk about a 20-year-old radio show. No one's heard of.
All right. See ya. Emails. I haven't covered these in a while, but there's a couple of really good ones that I want to just highlight. Amber, who's been in touch with us before, she's a listener in Adelaide.
Great.
Who I'm pretty sure I...
you've mentioned.
Yeah, or offended, or
okay.
I said something mean about her.
Did you? Okay.
Amber, thank you for this email. Last week I said that I would love to know what Steve thinks about the Instagram comments,
yeah,
which are just relentless references to the XFM show. She alerted me to this clip from another podcast, which is sort of like, as far as I can tell, the sort of, not the official, what's it like the... What's the word I'm looking for when something is the standard? It's the one that everyone...
The standard? I think that's appropriate.
It's the podcast about The Office and Extras that is the like go-to.
Yeah.
Okay. It's called Wern and Blog, The Office and Extras podcast.
Sure.
They spoke to Stephen Merchant just after Outlaws came out.
Okay.
So while he was on the publicity trail. So she alerted me to this clip, which is on one of the Reddits, where they ask him about the XFM shows and about his comments. So here's the first comment he made. So full credit to the Wern and Blog podcast. This is amazing. I sent them just this gushing fan email after I listened to this. Here's Stephen Merchant talking about the XFM shows 20 years later.
You know, I knew that that particularly with Carl, that we'd sort of found gold dust. Mm. And so, yeah, so I was aware that it was both sort of ramshackle and sort of fun. What I didn't anticipate is that it would have any kind of life beyond, really. I mean, I think to me, the fun of radio was always that it was quite sort of disposable, you know, that it sort of was, it was live and it kind of just came and went, you know? Yeah. And even with the podcasts, when we started doing them, to my mind, it was the same thing, like that sort of you did it and it kind of, and it, someone was entertained for half an hour and then it just disappeared like fish and chip wrappers, you know, the idea that it would sort of, that we would hang on and people would re-listen to it or find comfort in it, you know, as I sometimes hear people do, you know, yeah. People get quite a lot of messages about people for whom it sort of helped them with depression or mental health, or sort of, there's a certain reassurance to hearing us.
And through the lockdown last year, particularly, I think. Yeah.
Well, because it's just.
Yeah, like, which is lovely. But again, I don't think you can anticipate that.
Answers a lot of the questions we've been asking for like the last year.
And also is more or less what I expected.
Yeah.
But just so good to hear it straight from the horse's mouth.
And doesn't he sound different? Do you think in himself he sounds. I guess this is what happens between, you know, what was he, 29 and in his 40s now. Just get more self-assured. He just seems more confident, more sure of himself. It's just, it's good to hear.
Yeah, less goggle-eyed.
And also I found fascinating from a production point of view, he is the clear voice in that clip. And the hosts sound like they're on Zoom.
I know.
How does that work?
It might have been a choice. It's like, look, either we can sound good or he can sound good. Yeah, and they make the right choice. So this is when they ask him about the Instagram comments.
I don't read a lot of the social media. I mean, I kind of dip into it, you know, because I feel sort of bad not responding. And I feel guilty that I don't reply to more people. And I see people writing random comments, which I half the time I assume are from the podcast, but I have no memory of them. I just have to skim past that because otherwise I haven't got time to, you know, I haven't got time to look at someone quoting Monkey News. So it just seems like it's just like, yeah, whatever. Just, but I get out the way. I'm trying to read the sensible comments about the Outlaws. So it doesn't offend me or upset me. It feels like junk mail. You know, spam.
That's essentially what it is.
That's funny. It's interesting just from a creative pursuit, hey, how your, I don't think he's going to this extent, but how your successes become your annoyances. You know, like your things can become so successful that they don't hold you back. Well, they kind of hold you back in a way because he just wants people to engage with these new stuff.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey guys, I've been doing stuff for the last 20 years. And people are yelling things about Monkey News.
Yeah. I imagine Steve Coogan on the press trail for Philomena and just people shouting aha at him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can be something that becomes an albatross. Mm. But he seems to have a great sort of attitude towards it. And
it doesn't seem to bother him too much.
No. And he did also later talk about like, that because he is a fan of comedy and growing up there was no way for communities of fans to connect the way there is now. But he used to get the Fawlty Towers magazine or whatever and he said he would just devour it. So he also gets it, which I think is really nice. So Wern and Blog, the Office and Extras podcast, I'm assuming that most people, if you're listening to this, you're well aware. I'm not telling you anything new, but I was just looking at the, in case you haven't heard it, it came out in November of last year, the Stephen Merchant special episode. Then right before that, I literally just saw this, The Office 20th anniversary special with Ricky Gervais part one and part two. They're both an hour and a half each.
Right, you're going to listen to that this afternoon.
I might stop the podcast now so I can go and listen to this.
I thought you were going to say, let's just stop our podcast right now because why would we go on?
How could we compete? Have Ricky? Particularly if we're going to do a spin-off podcast.
I know,
about
we just
the
announced
office.
That we're going to talk about The Office with like no credibility.
What a waste of time. If they've spoken to Carl Pilkington, then I will quit.
You're scrolling through the back catalog now.
Unreal.
I get the impression that, you know, Carl's kind of a recluse. Like you'd have to get recording equipment and like head out to the highlands somewhere, climb up a mountain to find him.
Be like Rey trying to find Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's incredible. Another email, Keith got in touch. This is how dedicated fans are of Carl Pilkington. He and his friend came up with an idea of putting Carl in Terminator 2. Okay. And they took the time to do it. Here is the Pilkinator, a little clip.
Listen, we got to get her out of there.
Don't know if I can be bothered.
Great. What happens to her?
She's 98. There's not much you can do for her. You can, yeah, you can say you're warm. But at the end of the day, she's still going to be shit in her pants.
Shit, why did you tell me? We got to go right now.
I'll leave it.
You will fuck you. She's a priority to me.
No, we'll forget all that bit.
Hey, goddammit, what's your problem? Goddammit.
I'm all right. I'm up for it.
Help!
Love it.
Nice one. If you want to look it up, Carl in Terminator 2 on YouTube. Let's get to the air check. Series 2, episode 7, break 1. Carl's still not there. And someone emailed Claire to tell her she's not funny and ask when's Carl back.
Mm.
Some nice correspondence.
Yeah. You love getting those emails, don't you? Well, we don't really get emails anymore. Emails aren't something that a radio show usually engages with. Text messages or you just get phone calls
abuse
or comments
in
online.
Direct messages
on
social media or comments below posts. Ricky talked about his phone call with Carl, just sort of explaining that he'd been on holiday and then his dad got sick. Mm. How did you like that? Instead of Carl being there to tell funny stories, Ricky retells funny things that Carl told him during a phone call.
Yeah, that was the point I realized this might be a slim episode. Like when they're opening with, you know, Ricky recounting someone else's story.
Yeah, it's like third-hand Carlism.
Which really, like, if you don't know who Carl is and you're listening, Ricky's just telling a story that his friend told him on the phone.
Yeah. I like this little impression of Carl.
Oh, what's going on here?
When he sees the nudist.
Yeah. I love also that there's a bit of an affection to this, that they are interested to how Carl would... They're kind of speculating what his contribution would be if he was here. It's like they're telling stories and they're like, what would Carl think of this?
Yeah, yeah. And that's how entertaining he is. It's still fun to hear someone retell something that Carl told them earlier. So then in break 2, they talk about nudist beaches, and Stephen talks about being at a topless beach in France of being there with his family and a friend's family, and the mother of his friend took her top off. It reminded me, I did exchange in France.
Yeah.
And the mother of the host family I was with did that exact thing at a beach. But at least I was 18, so I was able, you know.
It wasn't as awkward.
It's not, there's sort of, on the spectrum of awkwardness between 14 and 18, there's a lot.
I get the impression that in France, that's just a lot more common.
Totally.
I watched a show once. It was on like SBS in the afternoon, which is the special broadcasting service, which is like a national, kind of a pseudo national broadcaster here. It's like half funded by the government, half funded by advertising.
It was, but then they brought in advertising. But it's supposed to be sort of the representing multicultural Australia.
It's a lot of
world movies,
European. Yeah. Content and stuff like that. It was a TV show on like a Saturday afternoon where these guys, it starts with them like waking up in a field naked. It's like a kind of like a reality kind of documentary, but the game is, or the show, it's like a travel show kind of, but they're nude and then they go door to door and it's like the people they meet along the way while they get food and clothing. But so they knock on the door like nude and be like, hi, can you help us? We're looking for some like clothes and some food or whatever.
Is it German?
Could have been German, but I thought it was French, but everyone was delighted to see them. Like everyone they showed thought it was hilarious and were like, come on in. Yeah, I've got some pants for you. I'm about to head out to work, but you guys make yourself some breakfast.
Sit down bare-assed on my white sofa.
Everyone, like...
Play volleyball.
Yeah, like it was like... I was like, what world is this? Like you'd be arrested in Australia if you did that.
You really would be... You'd kill someone. Someone would die.
Yeah, and so I was like, maybe nudity is seen differently in Europe. I don't know.
Well, there's another show. That's why I asked if it was German. There's another show, and it's also on SBS, called Adam and Eve. It's a dating German dating show where one woman and two guys are dropped on an island, and it's sort of like, let's see who gets along. And the girl spends time with one guy and then with another guy. They're all naked the whole time.
I think I've seen the American version of that, which is Dating Naked, which is similarly on, like, you know, it's basically like the Bachelor, but everyone's nude.
The Masked Singer. There's another one where it's like, oh, you're naked, but you're wearing this elaborate mask. So it's
fascinating.
You sort of judge.
No, I haven't seen that one. I'll say, yeah, it's the opposite.
Or maybe I just made up
it's
a
like
show.
Just judging people by their bodies.
Yeah. And not their face. So
I
really
do
hot
find the reality TV in Europe, it seems to be where all the wild ideas come from. And then they're kind of filtered into like America, where they kind of put a bit of a more PG spin on it.
There's a show, there's a British one where it is, where people are shown, again, sorry, maybe I'm confusing a few different shows, where people are shown some potential suitors from the neck down, completely naked, and they're invited to analyze and critique their naked bodies. And then whoever they choose is given the chance to do that again. And it's brutal.
Wild.
Yeah.
No, never had any experiences with nudist beaches here. There are, like, in a few hours south from where we are in Byron Bay, where all the Hollywood elite seem to be hiding out from the pandemic. There are some...
Hiding out nude.
There are some nudist beaches down there.
Are they really?
Mm. Well, they're not, like, government sanctioned. It's just, like, I don't know how these come about. Whether, you know, it seems to be something that people, the council kind of, like, turns a blind eye to. It's like, yeah, you can stay in this area if you want. But, like, yeah, I know my friend stumbled upon one once, and it was kind of a shock to him because he was trying to look for a party. His friends were setting up like a picnic party at the beach, and he was like clawing through the bush trying to find it. It was like a beach he had never been to, and he came out on this beach and he's like, everyone's naked. What's going on here?
There's an official, like a proper sanctioned nudist beach in Perth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Swanbourne. And it's just down... There's a family beach with a really nice cafe, and then you walk about 100 meters down the beach. There's a big sign that says it's a clothing optional from here on. So you can just, you look down and you can just see.
Here's a question
old
for you.
Man balls, because they're always old men.
Why is going to the beach the main activities that nudists like? Why are there no nudist hikes or nudist parks?
Well, there probably is. And they talk about on this show a guy who was doing like a walk the length of Britain completely naked. But as Carl points out, he's not naked. He's got boots on, a backpack and a bum bag and a hat. So he's not naked. He's just walking with his knob out.
Because in a lot of ways, I would think, you know, I don't know much about the nudist lifestyle, but I think the beach was the worst place to be nude.
Well, most people are basic, almost nude. It's just, oh, I think
right.
It's a...
Okay, know, I'm seeing the connection now, yeah.
If you're going nude skiing, there's a lot more layers you have to take off. But anyway, I will just note that Zach and I are both nude doing this podcast, but that's unrelated. So Ricky also talks about someone he knew who went on a family holiday to a nudist camp, which is mental. Like, that's child services level.
Yeah, definitely.
Taking your kids to a place where you all have to be naked around a bunch of other naked strangers. And then they, going into the end of the break, they talk about the email they got from Paul, who was asking about the Johnny Cash track. They think he asked for a copy of the album, and they do this great, I said there's four bits, this is bit number one, this great Ricky and Steve bit.
He says, unfortunately, like an idiot, I didn't listen to it and I didn't catch the name of the album. Could you by any chance send me the album?
He's having a laugh.
He's having a laugh.
What, for free?
Yeah, so that's not going to happen.
Actually, email him back. Say, Paul.
Shall I do it now?
Give us £8 for no reason.
I've also called him some quite offensive names.
It's good, though.
I'll put from Gervais.
Oh, dear. He's not going to like that.
That's pretty grim.
Nor's his mother.
No.
He shouldn't have brought her into it.
Indeed.
Yeah, they're great. Fun. They're working together really well there. Yeah. With, I love when Steve says, will I do it now? And you can hear the clacking in the background. Very, very funny. It reminds me of when my co-host Dom was new to radio. He was like 18, or maybe a bit old, 19 or 20. And they would get calls from people requesting songs. Have I told you this before? And he knew they weren't allowed to change the music, but he also knew that the listener was always right and you should do anything for a listener, was his impression. So he'd go, they'd go, oh, can we hear Johnny Cash? And he'd be like, I can't play it on the radio. I can play it down the phone line right now. So between talk breaks, while the other music was playing.
And you're supposed to be getting ready for the next part.
He would hit play on a song, put it down the phone line. He wouldn't listen, so he'd put his microphone down while he went and typed away getting grabs and getting ready for the next break. And then 3.5 minutes later when it was over, he'd put his fader up and he'd be like, did you enjoy that? How was that? And they'd be like, yeah, I guess it was good hearing the song down line. Well, I guess sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. They just thought like, oh, no, I don't want to hear it with my phone up against my ear down like a crackly phone line.
Wow. That's, I always just go like, okay, cool. Yeah, I'll see what I can do.
And yeah, I'll see what I can do is always code for no.
Yeah. moving to break four, Claire's nudist beach story. She talks about the guy who came up and got an erection chatting to her, which is just very sus. But what did you, the part I wanted to talk about was the moment at the end when it's revealed that it was sort of a planned bit.
So during the break, like Claire said, I want to do switch ones, right? And this man came over, an old fella, and she started off, said, he had the biggest knob I've ever seen. And then I laughed, and then she went, and then it got bigger. And I went, you can't tell it then. I was worried about that. But she left out the funny bit and just went, you just went all weird.
So they talked about it in the break, but then when it's introduced, Steve is like, oh, so have you been to a nudist beach, Claire? Mm. And it's brought up organically. That's the first time that they've at least given away that they plan something like that.
Yeah, and I guess that's something quite relatable in radio is you're talking, particularly with people you don't know super well, which is an instance they have here. They're working with someone new. So you're talking while the songs are playing and you might go, oh, stop that. We'll talk about that on the radio. Do you know, can you relate to that?
Yeah, but also how Ricky reacted to it compared to how he'd react if something was going wrong with Carl.
Well, I think that's why he... you know, we'll talk, maybe that's a factor of why he kind of butts out of it a little bit. And he's like, no, this wasn't what I told you to share. Like, this wasn't the agreement. And like, he's identified what parts of the story you should share. And obviously she had a different view on
She's
what parts were interesting.
Yeah.
And they kind of, so there's a disconnection there and he's kind of like, I'm just going to let this car go.
And a moment of like the complete different dynamic there currently is, because he's being sort of nice and sort of respectful in his own way to Claire, that like he isn't with Carl. It's interesting to hear that difference, to how he reacts to.
So you think with Carl he wouldn't have let the story keep going. He would have jumped in and interrupted and
well, first
maybe
of all,
berated
I think Carl
him.
Wouldn't have got it wrong.
Yeah, right.
He would have said exactly the funny part, but he still wouldn't have known it was the funny part.
Yeah, right.
Mm. They then move on to, in break seven, they come out of the most played song on the entire show, I think.
What's that?
Correct me if I'm wrong. Feeder, Come Back Around.
Okay.
That's just, they back announce that song 1,000 times over the run of the show. And then they get talking about Prince. And this brings me to great RSK Ricky and Steve bit number two.
Those great pop tunes, and he's written, so, you know, I think
well,
he's brilliant.
I don't bandy this word around, Rick, as you know.
Go on.
But I'd like to use the word genius.
I thought you were going to say I'll pay for that.
No. Genius.
I missed that when stuff. I was listening through. That was a good burn just by good Ricky. I'll pay for that.
But then it's Ricky is doing what he does great with Carl, but he's doing it with Steve this time. He's reacting to input.
I think that's a part of the reason Steve likes having Carl around. It's a distraction from Ricky's tractor beam. I'm like, oh, no, don't point it at me.
His ridicule tractor beam, yeah. And then there's this bit that Ricky picks up on.
The only thing I would say about the concert last night, 3 hours, he played for 3 hours non-stop. Well, almost 3 hours, non-stop. Didn't take a break. A cracking band, only 5 minutes.
Imagine taking a break, just reading a paper, having a coffee. Going, what are you looking at?
And also very witty.
20 minutes, by law.
Love it. Absolutely love it. So that's Ricky Steve. Bit number three. Talking about Prince being a Jehovah's Witness.
I didn't know that.
Going door to door. You didn't know that?
No.
Oh, so here's something from an article that I picked up. Though raised as a Seventh-day Adventist, Prince joined the Jehovah's Witnesses in 2001 when he became a Jehovah's Witness. Some were skeptical that an artist with a career as entrenched in candid expressions of sexuality could truly model his lifestyle after such a conservative Christian sect. But naysayers were proved wrong in 2003, so that's after this XFM show. In 2003, when an Eden Prairie, Minnesota woman reported to, oh no, Minneapolis, to the newspaper, local newspaper, that Prince had come knocking at her door as part of the fundamental evangelism of their faith.
I was asking, I wonder if he had to do the door knocking.
And according to this woman, Prince used disguises to deflect, a disguise to deflect attention from himself.
That's interesting. I would have thought that he would be cashing in on there. Because usually...
You might convert a few more.
I think a lot of people just go, oh, no, thank you, not interested. But if it was Prince, you might be like, yeah, come in, man. Yeah, we can do 20 minutes on the JWs, but if I can do 20 minutes asking you questions about your career...
I'll do an even trade. How about that? We then move on to the next great Steve bit, which is Ricky and Steve riffing. And I love when they break into these little scenes.
We haven't heard it in a long time.
Haven't heard it for ages. What Steve's approach would be to try to get into the Prince after party.
What would have been your approach to
get in? Hello there, Steve Merchant here, XFM, Ricky Gervais show. Any chance I could come in
to your party?
To your party, please.
I'll be honest. Can I call you Lanky?
Well, if it helped me get in, yeah.
It won't, but thank you anyway. I'll be honest, Lanky. Your chances are slim to none. Four eyes.
Okay. All right. I enjoyed the concert, if that is any...
Okay.
I could talk about it on the radio.
I'm going to take away that slim.
Okay.
It's none now, right. Freak.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
So go away, yeah?
Cheers.
Okay. Was it something like that?
It was not dissimilar, Rick. There was a lot more profanity.
He's, Ricky goes hard, doesn't he? You know, and I think Steve doesn't particularly like it. Like, that time he kind of went along with it more, but usually he's like, oh, hang on. We're not going after me.
It is the content, a lot of Steve's self-deprecating humor, which is that he is bad with women and he's a bit of a creepy weirdo. But I think it's different when it's coming from someone
else. It's always different when it's coming from someone else. You're like, hang on, no, I'm allowed to say that about me.
But I love, like, it's so funny because it's right on the edge. But it's like, and you think, oh, well, if it's only, you only roast the ones you love. It's a symptom of a very close relationship. But I really don't have, I don't think I have any relationships, like my closest friends, where I feel comfortable doing that. And I wish I did.
Yeah.
In a way. Well, it's,
you know, as long as they're, you know, you roast the ones you love, they have to be cool with it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they go, oh, no, I'm but not, that's what I'm, I mean. I like, don't like that.
Because I'm not confident that, because it means that you're so comfortable that they know how you truly feel about them, that they will be okay with you joking at your expense. And I think that's a very difficult thing to pull off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Steve hits back at Ricky about his supposed presence at the David Bowie gig. And then we get to probably the crux of this show, the one of the real memorable takeaway parts, is that Ricky makes Steve completely speechless.
No, what happened was that Bowie's... people just said, are you coming to the concert tonight? And I said I couldn't. But let me tell you something.
Wait a minute.
To get you off this track, right? The next night, we did go to dinner with Bowie at someone's house. But look, wait, right, listen. It was a small affair. It was me and Jane, Jonathan and Jane. It was David.
First names.
Remarkably long silence that's only interrupted by Ricky. You know, Steve still hasn't said anything. I, when I first heard this, didn't know whether it was a bit or not for a few minutes. It's like, did this actually happen, or is he just saying this to like extend as far as he could? You know, if he's upset that he didn't go to a Bowie concert, how far could I, what would be the thing that he'd be most upset with? You know, I'd become best friends with Bowie. It took me a while to figure out. I'm like, I think this actually happened.
But that's, yeah, that's true. And it is true. And not only that, just the picture painting of the, I mean, who was that royalty? Like, whose house did they go to?
I know.
He said there were Lucian Freud paintings on the wall and Damien Hirst and Richard E. Grant just popped in. I was like, oh, yeah, I live next door. And references butlers and servants.
I think they...
It was Prince Andrew.
Did they... Was it?
No, I don't know.
Oh, okay. I was like, geez.
Who's the worst person it could be?
I think they reference again, second episode in a row, jokingly, but then you go like, I wonder if there's an element of truth to this. Steve's, the fact that Steve's not getting the same fame out of their relationship, you know, because I think in this story, Bowie says, I was just watching your tapes.
Yes.
And Steve goes, wait a second.
Thinks he's talking about The Office.
Yeah, I worked on that too. You didn't do that all by yourself. And then it's kind of like, I've been in these situations before and I can relate to how Steve must feel in the moment when Ricky goes, no, it wasn't for that. It wasn't for the thing you worked on. It was the thing I did by myself. Like, yeah. I was listening to...
But the whole reason Bowie was shown that video in the first place was because, oh, this guy from this very popular sitcom also did this, which relates to you.
I was working with a guy once and he... I was playing back. I was getting clips from my own show. Oh, no, I wasn't. I was just talking. I was talking to him, right? And I'm just talking. We're both at the computer. I'm talking. While I'm talking to him, he puts headphones in and I didn't know that. And I made a joke and he starts laughing and I look over at him and he goes, oh, no. I was laughing at the podcast. Which I'm positive now that he did. To kind of be a dick to
power,
me.
Power move.
Because I'm like, what? The podcast had a joke at the exact same time I told a joke. But, you know, the moment where you like, you think that you've got something and then they go, no, it wasn't your thing. It
wasn't actually that.
It was my thing.
And Ricky tries to be gracious and go along with it. And it's only later that he goes, no, because what he was actually talking about was the razzmatazz thing. But... Yeah, because this is also, don't forget, this is coming in the wake. We've already had the thing where he didn't take Steve to the Jonathan Ross taping of the performance.
I know.
And then after that, you heard a little reference that they went to the gig together. They went to another performance together. And now this has happened.
But also, have they not, he's never mentioned that? How long ago was the dinner?
Yeah.
Are he and Steve not in contact enough
yeah.
that he didn't go even the next day?
Like, you send won't him a believe message? What happened.
Man, yeah. Last night I had dinner with Bowie.
Yeah.
Or does he not want to bring it up? Maybe he is thinking like, oh, I don't want to rub it into Steve. You know, Steve would be upset at this. I won't bring it up. And then there's an opportunity on the show to do it for humor. And he's like, I will.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
It's another great example of just this show capturing such a juicy time in their careers.
So interesting. I was thinking while I was listening, what would you rather? What's worse? Never getting the success or getting some success, but the person you're doing it with gets way more. Like, do you know what I mean?
Well, because I think it's they might not have talked about it all, but you can kind of go, well, because first of all, they wouldn't have expected the show to become what it became. It'd be like, hey, we're just going to make this good show and you're going to be a front. You might get recognized about it more, but I want to create a comedy show and this is the opportunity. But you can think about that, you can intellectualize that, but then you won't ever factor into your considerations that one day you'll, as in Ricky, you'll get invited to have dinner with David Bowie and I'll miss out on that.
I wonder if that's why so often now, think of all the famous shows, comedy shows in the last 5 years, thinking of things like Fleabag and stuff like that, where the creator is the main person. I wonder if like people are just like, I'm not being behind the scenes anymore.
I am learning from Stephen Merchant's mistake. I am not missing out.
Yeah, I wonder if
dinner with Bowie.
I even think of like, you know, people like Broad City and stuff like that. Like the two people who made it are the two people who are in it.
Yes.
Like, I wonder if they were redoing it now, whether it would be where Steve would be one of the characters.
Well, that's what they did with Extras.
Yeah.
They made him one
of
the
leads. Yeah, that's right. He's like the agent or something.
But also, we're in the age of the creator, of the one person. I mean, that's what you do. You make your own videos. If you were working, if like a YouTuber or someone was like working with someone who, from the very beginning, who was off camera, then maybe something like that could happen or would happen again. But it's crazy how it's playing out for Ricky's life in this time, because as they talk about, like, David Bowie is his hero, and he had a band in the early 80s called Shona Dancing, and they had a couple of songs, and he was a Bowie ripoff, like a sound alike as well. And before The Office, actually, I don't know if it's for the if it was for the 11 o'clock show or something else. If someone can let me know on the Patreon or garlicpilkboyspod@gmail.com, there is a fully produced sketch of that Ricky features in, where he's part of a board member, part of senior management for a video shop chain, and he's dressed as David Bowie. He's an impersonator, and he keeps pitching these like Bowie-centric ideas for the video shops. So that's what he was doing.
Yeah.
And now he's at dinner with Bowie, and Bowie is taking the piss out of him over his band.
I was thinking,
how crazy,
thinking of that, him in that room where he says, he kind of goes, who walks in? Is it the neighbor? Where he goes,
Richard E. Grant.
Where he just goes, like, he tries to play it cool. What does he say? It's like a very English expression, like, oh, you're right.
Or something like that.
Whereas like we might be like, oh, g'day. Just like a very, just casual greeting. I'm not making a big deal out of it. I was thinking all those people he's with have had these long careers. And Ricky, you know, he does kind of go like, you know, because Stephen assumes they're talking about The Office, but he goes, no, it was about my, what was the other appearance?
Razzmatazz.
He doesn't have that much. It's only a couple of years to draw from. Yeah. Imagine kind of being a no name to going to having dinner with David Bowie within a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. He also did a little run on the 11 o'clock show. And Ricky actually did have his own talk show for six episodes called Meet Ricky Gervais.
But it wasn't 10 years prior.
No. It all happened sort of one year after another. Yeah. It's wild. The idea of David Bowie that Steve points out and makes fun of, the idea that David Bowie, much like a leader of a country or something, will be given like, okay, here's a tape of you'll be having dinner with Ricky Gervais tonight. Here's a tape for you to, so you have some talking points.
He says that as if to take away from the fact that he knew something about him. To me, I think it adds to it that you were a part of the system, and he watched it. Whether or not, whatever the reason was why he watched it, doesn't matter. He watched it.
Because it's also not now where it would just be like, oh, here's you having dinner with Ricky. Here's a little video on my phone that I'll show you.
Would anyone even watch it?
He would have had to have put it, like someone would have to put it in a VHS, like here, and I'd sit down and watch it on television.
I wonder, my microphone's cutting out a little bit. Do you reckon it's running out of battery?
Oh, is it?
I don't know.
I'm not. It sounds okay, but I've got different headphones.
Is it flashing?
No flash.
Oh, it's okay. We'll see. We had to put it on charge.
It might be this headphone cable.
That could be it. Anyway, sorry.
Where were we at?
The Bowie dinner. Bowie dinner. Actually, I think Bowie does become a fan, doesn't he? That's the impression I get when he's on Extras. And when they talk about, I get the impression that this relationship blossoms.
Yes.
That there's they actually also kind of become friends.
There's a comic relief sketch where where David Bowie's in it because he and Ricky are just hanging out in New York.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, definitely. So they then go to break 10 where they've had an email about talkover. Classic radio show problem. A lot of content directors have big issues with talkover.
Yeah, well, people are talking over the top of each other, people trying to make their
point. It's very annoying, isn't it?
It happened a lot in this podcast when we're on Zoom, which
I carefully tried to edit it.
Yeah, did you? But yeah, classic radio problem.
Yeah. And then they're so far out of ideas that Ricky decides that he'll just start making a little weird grunting squawk noise when he's bored, and he just breaks into it because it's literally, there's nothing to say or talk about. But it's not a bad, like, Hamish and Andy has the bell. Ricky's got the
grunt. Well, it is super annoying at the start, and they pull it back really well. So Steve is saying, like, who are you doing this for? you're the only person enjoying this. But then it becomes a running... Throughout the episode, he does the squawk at the end when they want to end a break.
Yes.
And go to the song. And it becomes a running joke. And it is kind of... It does pay off in the end. At the start, it is true. You know, that person... Ricky seems to do this a lot. Just the person when you're like, enough. You know, you're on the bus and you're down the back and you're like, this was funny at the start, half an hour ago.
It's all fun and games, but then at some point they cross an invisible line and go to
I get the impression that working with Ricky, making The Office, goes to that a lot.
Yes, definitely. So then they touch on a few things in the next break. They touch on that Ricky's white-collar boxing thing is still in the works. Ricky's a bad backseat driver. And they talk about irrational fears, which that's just classic radio fodder. That's like in the top 10 phoners of all time. Irrational fears would be in there. Maybe in the top 20.
Like, where do you put your ketchup or your tomato sauce? In the fridge or in the cupboard. Give us a call.
What's your favorite pizza topping? And the guy on the train with the dog that farted. Steve tells that story. Just rough. And then they, they're really running out of steam. They literally do a break where it's like, all right, we're running out of things to say. So they just play more music. And Ricky makes this interesting point about hooking to songs. Yeah.
But you know, you meant to say like on Heart or Magic, you're told to say coming up a classic by so-and-so and people stay watching in case it's their favourite. And if it's not, you don't give that away. But it doesn't work when it's things like, I hear things all the time like, after this, a classic from Men at Work. That'd be Down Under then.
Yeah.
Coming up next, a beautiful tune by Danny Wilson. Mary's Prayer. It's Mary's Prayer.
True.
You don't, because you do a show
mm.
and have not really been an announcer, you don't ever do hooks, do you?
Oh, we do content hooks.
Yes.
So like, coming up, Dom's neighbours are super annoyed at him. Find out why.
Yeah.
Or do you have a weird person in your street? I think I found ours. Tell me what you think up next.
The strangest person in the world. See if you agree.
It is next. So hard. It is a real... See, because here's the thing. When you hear it done poorly... Like, we're kind of doing tropey versions now. It's annoying and tropey. But the people who do it well, that is a sign of a good broadcaster because they do it seamlessly where you don't notice what they're doing and you are hooked. That's the idea. I can't get out of the car. I want to hear what that is. Mm. And that's the real skill that, like, you don't... It's one of those, like, subtle things. You don't realize it's done well until you hear someone do it really poorly.
Mm. Yeah. But that's... I felt slightly attacked because that's what I'm constantly doing. But I'm always trying to find a different way to do it because he's right. Because if it's Men at Work, then it's pretty obvious what it's going to be. Unless it's Who Could It Be Now? Because we also play that. But I try to find
that's
things.
What you should say.
Yeah.
We play, we've got two Men at Work tracks in the system. Is it going to be their big one?
Is it going to be
their slightly less well-known one? Find out coming up next.
But I always try to find things like the Chris Isaak song, Somebody's Crying. He supposedly, so the story goes, he wrote it. He came up with it when he was at a party and he'd just been broken up with and he was feeling upset. So he went into a wardrobe and was like crying and he started writing the song. So I always go like, coming up next, the Chris Isaak song he wrote while crying in a wardrobe at a party.
Oh, I wonder what that one is.
Yeah, oh God, what song could that possibly be?
The other similar related radio trope I laugh at all the time is a coworker used to do it all the time. Like, so you get a little grab from an artist. So you might get a grab from that Chris Isaak interview. And he says, I wrote this one while crying in a wardrobe at a party. But so what you do is he's like, you'd go like, oh, Chris Isaak actually has an interesting backstory on this song and then play the grab. I wrote this while I was in a...
Yeah, yeah.
What I love is when announcers go, Chris Isaak says that he wrote this while crying at a party. And then they go, I wrote this while I was crying in order of at a party. It's like, you don't say the thing that's in the grab.
Yeah,
like,
it's a craft, everyone. Radio is a craft. It is definitely easy to get wrong. So then they finish the show by Ricky talking about his terrible taste in television. He loves music in this era when it was still new, particularly. I don't know if he would watch them as much these days, but he loves Pop Idol and all of the like singing competition shows.
Well, I guess they're fresh in that there's a...
And he's a singer. He's a musician.
There's a bit of heart. Maybe back then it was a bit more genuine too. Like these days it's more a flash in the pan. Actually, it's not even a flash in the pan anymore.
Not even, yeah.
I was thinking how interesting it is. I think they played Nirvana in this episode. And I thought, wow, Nirvana was 10 years ago in this world. Whereas like now that would be like playing
that's
someone.
Gangnam Scott style.
Yeah, that's Gangnam Style. That's playing something from 2012.
Call Me Maybe.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yes, it is. Yeah, the gap in time when you think about like.
Because really, the radio show that you do would play a lot of these songs, hey? So you're still playing the same songs.
We are the same distance away from 1982 is from 1982 is the same distance from 1942.
Yeah, that's correct. Those are 20-year periods.
No, about 40 years.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But you know what?
You mean from? Okay, sorry. From,
so the gap, the time between 82 and 2022, I go, yeah, it's a long time, but it doesn't feel like a million. It doesn't feel like the whole world has.
I see what you're saying.
Totally changed.
Yeah.
But from 1942 to 1982, it's like another planet.
Yeah.
So those sort of time differences. Wild.
Well, we'd be playing Nirvana as a real throwback now, whereas it's pretty recent.
Well, yeah, we're playing on the radio station I work for. But imagine a station in the 80s who's like, all right, come on, you still cool. I don't know what it would be. Like a station in the 80s playing 40s music, but still trying to be cool and relevant.
That's
because really that's sort of what is happening.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. And they talk about how long on the show. They talk about how long Ricky might last in the Big Brother house, which then plays into Extras, the Christmas special of Extras,
because
his character goes into the Big Brother house. And they end with the return. This is the absolute sign they have nothing to talk about, no ideas. They bring back Song for the Ladies.
I know. And they try to make it out as if, it's not scraping the bottom of the barrel, because Steve introduces us like, oh, we haven't done this in a few weeks. It'll be great to do it.
So
we haven't got around to it. The reason we haven't done it the last couple of weeks is because we haven't got around to it, not because it's basically worthless as content.
Yes. And that's the end of the show. So what was your favorite bit?
The bit where they played out the little sketch where they played out writing the email to the listener. Where they later apologized because they read the email wrong.
Had it wrong. You just wanted the name. Yeah, that's my favorite bit as well. Next week, Series 2, Episode 8. Carl is back.
Yes, finally.
It's an all-time great episode.
Great.
We get the birth of Educating Ricky, a new segment. So Carl comes back from his holiday, locked and loaded.
Yeah, he's ready.
He's got new ideas. Yeah. He's refreshed.
You don't know how much I'm craving Carl to be back.
The birth of Educating Ricky. The story of the hairy Chinese kid, which becomes a reference. And Carl's game finally gets its new name, Rockbusters.
And does it find the format that it stays with?
Not quite.
Okay.
There's still, I think next week might be the last week before it settles into its traditional format.
Great.
Contact us, carlypilkboyspod@gmail.com or Instagram, carly.pilkboys. In our Instagram bio, you will find the link to our merch. And you can follow Zach Mander on Instagram and TikTok, ZACHMANDER. Tell him you're a listener of the podcast in his comments, just to prove that you exist.
Mm-hmm.
And
I can't, make no promises that you're going to enjoy it.
If you like seeing a Zach dressed as a child roasting... blanking on his name.
Joe Rogan.
Then get around Zach's TikTok and find me, David S.L. Ferrier. David Ferrier Cartoons.
What's your handle?
David Ferrier Cartoons on Instagram. I don't really do anything. I haven't done anything for a while. But yes, and check out the Patreon, patreon.com/CarlyPilkBoys to get the first episode of our little Office spin-off for the Brady Brett Boys podcast, talking about The Office. No one's done that before. So enjoy. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Oh.
oh, what's going on here?